Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, each and every week at this time, bringing you the big conversation, bringing you the great debate. But it can only be a debate if you join in. That's why our telephone numbers and our SMS and email are all over the screen all throughout the show. The phone number is 44208601455. If you call us, we'll call you back. Remember, if you get through on the phone, make sure the volume on your television is down at zero or no one will hear any of us. The SMS number is 4478008066 and the email comment@presstv.co.uk. A slightly different format this week and from now on. In the second half of the show, we're going to have a debate, and this week it's about Saudi Arabia. So if you have a point of view on Saudi Arabia, either positive or negative, you call us now, 44208601455, and we'll call you back and put you on the air in the second half of the show. Lots to talk about. The Iraq inquiry finally got underway in Britain under Sir John Chilcot. He said that he is going to apportion blame if he thinks any is there to be apportioned. Tony Blair's people are saying that he's afraid he's going to be put on some kind of trial. We should be so lucky. And can it possibly be true that the government in Sudan have been lashing women because they're wearing trousers? What kind of Islam would that be? What would that say about the hundreds and hundreds of millions of Muslim women all over the world who wear trousers? I want to hear more about this story because I'm slightly suspicious of it. But if it's true, then they'll be getting a lash from me. The Sudanese government has had my support in the past, but not on this one. And we'll be talking about the situation in the Middle East and across the Muslim world in general. And that includes, of course, Nigeria, where hundreds of people have been killed in violence between Islamist fanatics and the security forces of Nigeria over just the last few days. Or at least that's the construction put on it in the Western media. So, on these or any other matters in the first half of the show, you can call me, 44208601455. And remember, all views expressed here are my own. They're not the views of Press TV, still less are they the views of the government of Iran. Let's start on the comment wall with some great cartoons. An Afghan fighter being held up by a banana. This a reference to David Miliband, the Foreign Secretary of Britain, who was famously photographed holding a banana and will never live it down. Halt, who goes there, uppity fuzzy wuzzy or pragmatic stooge? This a reference to the new British policy announced in the week, whereby we're going to talk to pragmatic Taliban, moderate Taliban, Taliban who want to come in from the cold. Well, at least it's a step in the right direction, because it's a war. As I said on BBC Question Time last Thursday night, which is why I wasn't here, is doomed. That's Gordon Brown about to sneeze. Is it the swine flu epidemic that's laid him low as he covers his nose and mouth? No, it's Afghanistan. Now wash your hands is the NHS advice. Better if he washed his hands of the war in Afghanistan, when so many of our young soldiers are now coming back in boxes or seriously wounded to be abandoned in due course by this or the next government. Here again, Miliband, I think, yes, in The Guardian, Martin Rosen, I think, it looks like his work, holding up Hamid Karzai. Again, this dichotomy between the sponsors of terror and those who are ready to come to the table, and a mountain of British corpses there wrapped and bleeding. Very powerful. The Afghan war, the popularity of the Afghan war in Britain has definitely begun to turn decisively against the government and against continued involvement in the war. People know that the war is doomed. This a reference to the hypocrisy of Gordon Brown, bowing his head as the last survivor of the Great War, 1914-18, is laid to rest, bowing his head to the dead of the Great War, whilst a mountain of dead of another little war, Afghanistan, are beginning to pile up there in the foreground. Brilliant work by Martin Rosen in The Guardian, I must say. He's a very political, very brilliant cartoonist. So, I hope that you enjoyed those cartoons. Let us have any cartoons that catch your attention, please email them to us at comment@presstv.co.uk. Now let's stay on the comment wall, take our first email of the evening. This one is from Nigeria, Lawal. The overthrow of the Taliban and establishment of a democratic regime is a noble cause that no civilized nation should regret undertaking. It's not a matter of undue interference in a Muslim state, but that of global responsibility to bring an end to a despotic regime which perpetuated heinous crimes, hiding, taking cover in Islam. Well, the point is this. First of all, it won't succeed. Which is a pretty good reason for not continuing with it. When you're in a hole, the first rule of holes is if you're in a hole, stop digging. It doesn't matter if we throw another 70, 80, 170, 180 soldiers, although the Queen does not have that many soldiers, into the maw in Afghanistan. It will not succeed. The Soviet Union had hundreds of thousands of soldiers in Afghanistan and they were still defeated. So it won't succeed. And then there's the question of our young men being asked to die, to kill and to die, so that such and such a village we've never heard of might have the chance to vote for Hamid Karzai in a rigged presidential election in a couple of weeks' time. Well, I'll tell you, my friend, I'm not prepared to sacrifice my son so that an unknown village in Afghanistan can cast a vote in an election that means nothing in faraway Afghanistan. And you know what? I don't think you're prepared to sacrifice your son either. Why then should we be asking other mothers and fathers to sacrifice their sons so that we can interfere in the internal affairs of a very far away country? This is simple politics. We have an interest in making sure Afghanistan is not a center of terrorism harming us. That's a legitimate interest and we're entitled to defend it. We're not entitled to govern, occupy and rule Afghanistan. It's doomed. Let's take another email on the comment wall. Let's see where this one's from. I want your country up there. This one from Cameroon. In reference to African leaders who steal billions and hide in European and American banks, in my village, he who hides stolen goods is considered a thief as well. Does it not operate the same in those countries? What a very good point. I couldn't have put that better myself. All these banks, all these arms companies, all these jewelers, all these real estate companies that take the ill-gotten gains of these tyrants and dictators around the world, don't they have some responsibility, some criminal culpability too? I say yes, their ill-gotten gains should be returned to the people of their country. Well said from the Cameroon. Let's take another email. This one is from where? From England. Carl, there are two reasons why England, is in Afghanistan. Well, it's not very good English. First, the massive oil reserves, forecasted from satellite imagery and test drilling. Second, it's imperative we are there when Israel attack Iran, which is coming very soon, which is why envoys from the US have been active recently. I'm horrified that we use our brave armed forces for corporate control of countries. It is criminal and murder. Carl, Israel is not going to attack Iran, neither very soon, nor soon, nor any time in the near future, because the United States government will not allow Israel to attack Iran. And if Israel or the United States did attack Iran, they would be making the biggest mistake in history, because Iran is more than capable of hitting them back with interest. That's a fact. Let's take another email. This one is from England again. Why can't people get Tony Blair and George Bush to be held responsible for their actions? After all, in a democracy, this should be possible. Well, if we really did have a democracy, then it would be possible. Indeed, their crimes would not have been committed in the first place. But they used all the panoply of state, all the subterfuge, it's a polite word of saying, all the lies that they told to hoodwink the rest of us momentarily into their disastrous crimes. The Iraq war inquiry began today. It's set up by the government, who chose its chairman, who is one of the great and the good, one of the grey blurs of the Mandarin class of the British ruling class. He chose the same kind of people for his panel. The evidence will not be given on oath. Much of it will be given in secret, and no criminal proceedings can come out of the other end. So this will not be the last inquiry into the Iraq war. Some good may come out of it, but we'll continue until we have George Bush and Tony Blair on trial. And if they're not on trial in this life, for sure they'll be on trial in the next. Let's take an SMS this time. This one from Africa, big place. By the end of his term in office, I think Obama will leave a more confused and dangerous world than Bush did. This is because he is very contradictory. Well, why don't you call us and we can discuss that? Because I need to know really what you mean. 44-208-601-455. I think we have a telephone call, and that's what I like best of all. Yes, caller, where are you calling from? Hello.
I'm calling from Oshogbo, Nigeria.
Very welcome, sir. Go ahead.
I'm calling from Nigeria, Oshogbo, in Osho State.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, my conviction is that the West are not very realistic. The West are not very realistic of certain things that is happening around the world, especially to the Muslim world.
Go on.
The problem with the West, there are a lot of sentiment about their, yes, they are not very realistic to the Muslim world and to the third world in particular. Because some of the objective, concerning the problem the Palestinians have in Gaza with the Israel, they are asking the Sudan president, they're taking to the World Court, in fact, taking some other president of the West
It's a bad line, and I'm really not following what you're saying. But insofar as I did, you were talking about the hypocrisy of African leaders being taken to war crimes trials when the great Western leaders, the big white chiefs who wanted to shoulder the white man's burden around the world in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere, are going free, indeed flourishing, especially Tony Blair. He's made millions. He even got, as I doubted when a viewer pointed it out, but I was wrong and the viewer was right, even got £1 million gift from an Israeli organization. Imagine the peace envoy to the Middle East receiving £1 million gift from one side in the conflict. You really couldn't make that up. Thanks, I'm sorry about that, it just wasn't a good line. Let's take an email on the comment wall. This one is from the USA, Washington. I work with World Youth Aid Organization in Washington, D.C. We're organizing a global youth's combined world conference against racism and child abuse taking place from the 8th to the 11th of September 2009 at Washington, D.C. and in Dakar, Senegal from the 15th to the 18th of September 2009. We request all people from various countries around the world. That's from Evelyn Davidson. I don't know anything about that conference. I can't speak for it, but the information, I suppose, speaks for itself. Don't forget that in the second half of the show, we're going to be having a special discussion on Saudi Arabia. So if you have a point of view, either for or against the setup in Saudi Arabia, call me, 44-208-601-455. I think I have a telephone call on the line now. Yes, caller, where are you calling from?
Hi, good evening, Mr. Galloway.
Yes, sir, where are you?
I'm calling from Scotland, Mr. Galloway.
Welcome, go ahead, sir.
My name is Smile, actually. I'm from Turkey. I've been living for a long time in Scotland. All I was going to say, thank you very much, Mr. Galloway, doing the very good program all the time.
Thank you.
And I'm very happy to watching you.
Thanks.
And having acquired a lot of respect, being a truthful person.
Thank you, sir.
And besides that, my brother, what I was going to say about regarding what's going on all over the world for the moment and what's happening particularly in Afghanistan about British involvement.
Mm-hmm.
All I will say to generous, to the public, to the everybody, let's be human, let's be happy, don't get involved in war unless it's not necessary. And if any war in there, fight for the cause of truth, fight for the something to put in world goodness and remove the badness. But obviously, this is not happening, and everybody fight for the greed, fight for the their evil deeds and telling the people wrong things, whoever don't have no knowledge and they believe them. All I was going to say, one general things to the whole world, they can understand one thing. People are now not stupid. People are now very open-minded. People are know exactly what's going on. We believe that people are in there, it's a puppet, which is what's going on in the car, there is a puppet man. And besides that, whatever happened in Afghanistan, one thing is open and clear, history proved that. Doesn't matter regarding what I say. You can't beat Afghan people, and you're there for what?
Well, thank you. I think the point that you made there that was most powerful was that people are no longer able to be fooled. You can't fool all of the people all of the time, and you can't even fool some of the people all of the time, because the amount of media and information that we now have in the world, the amount of facts being brought to bear on the debate over Afghanistan, have completely shredded public support for the war. The facts of the men coming back in boxes, the facts of the men coming back seriously wounded, the obvious lack of an exit strategy, all this big imperial talk by the former British ambassador in Kabul, going to fight there for 50 years. Who wants to fight for 50 years? I'm not a pacifist, let me make that clear. I think we need armed forces. They need to be properly equipped, properly clad, properly armed and properly paid, and their families have to be properly housed. In the Second World War, I would have been the first in the queue for the recruiting office. Indeed, I'd have been fighting in Spain in 1936 in the International Brigade if I'd been old enough. And so I'm not saying that there are no wars that ever have to be fought, but the wars of George Bush and Tony Blair definitely aren't included in those. Thanks very much indeed for that call from Scotland. Let's see where this next email's coming from. Remember, we want your country up here. Nima from Rome. George, what I don't understand is why we can't do something about African leaders. Isn't it possible to replace them like Saddam? With the success of Iraq in mind, you really want that visited on Africa? You want Iraqs all over Africa? Please, have a bit of common sense. The African leaders are dictators or are leaders of countries so poor and so marginalized that even if they have the right spirit, there's really not very much that they can do, because the balance of power and wealth in the world so disadvantages Africa that there's virtually no space at all to operate in. We have a telephone call. Let's hear what they have to say. Yes, caller, where are you calling from? Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello, sir. Where are you?
This is Thomas. I'm calling from Asmara, Eritrea.
Very welcome indeed. From Eritrea, my goodness, we're getting around the world today. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, my question to you is, do you know what the world's number one covert military operation is?
I don't.
We call it Ethiopia Gate. Over $20 billion of Western aid has been diverted by the Ethiopians to build their army, which is the largest, best equipped in Africa. And Noam Chomsky says that the U.S. foreign policy is like that of the mafia. If the smallest store doesn't pay protection money, they have to be destroyed. And the Ethiopian military is the strong arm enforcer for the Western countries. And this is why they've got this huge military. It invaded us in Eritrea in 2000. They invaded Somalia. They continue to occupy parts of Somalia and Eritrea. And this is the best-kept secret in the Western media. Over $20 billion, and top millions of Ethiopians are starving as I speak.
Well, it's not a secret here. We've dealt with it many times, and especially in relation to Somalia, and also their role in relation to the Sudan, whose territorial integrity I believe all of us must support, and whose right to sell its energy resources to whomsoever it wants, in its case China, must also be defended. Ethiopia is undoubtedly a proxy for imperial interests in the world. And whilst Ethiopian children are starving to death in the highlands, Ethiopia is spending foreign aid on building up its armed forces so that it can regularly attack, bombard, and even occupy its neighbors. So, you put it very well, but we were there before you, some weeks, even months ago. Thanks very much for the call from Eritrea. Let's take an email on the comment wall. This one is from New York, Tony. I just saw Obama's speech in Cairo. I know it's late, but what on earth was he talking about? He had no direction. He just preferred to suck up to everyone. Is this really what the US needs to regain respect? Well, Tony, I thought that Barack Obama's speech in Cairo was an excellent speech. I thought it was brilliantly written, brilliantly delivered. I thought, you know, the last guy, George Bush, wouldn't have got past the first paragraph. And he would have choked on many of the things that were said in Obama's speech. It pointed a new direction for the United States. It's very important that that direction is travelled. You see, he said that the situation of the Palestinian people was intolerable. Well, if something's intolerable, that means you won't tolerate it. You can't say something's intolerable and then write a check for the continuation of that which was intolerable. So action speaks louder than words. The words were beautiful, but they have to be followed by action. I wonder if that's what you meant. Thanks very much. Let's take another telephone call. Yes, caller, hello.
Hi, Mr. Galloway, can you hear me?
I can. Where are you calling from?
Hi, Mr. Galloway. My name is Sarah. I'm calling you from London.
Welcome. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Galloway, I was just watching your program, and I'm Iranian, and I just wanted to ask you a question: that why are you, with your comments, supporting a regime which is killing hundreds and thousands of innocent people in Iran? Why are you supporting this regime?
Which thousands were killed?
I'm sorry?
You said it was killing hundreds of thousands. Which hundreds of thousands was it killing?
Iranian, innocent Iranian people in Iran at the moment.
Hundreds of thousands?
Yes.
Do you really mean to say that?
Yes, I do mean to say that.
Okay. Well, here we have a claim that the Iranian government is killing hundreds of thousands of Iranians. This is as absurd a claim as I've heard at any time on this show. There was an election in Iran. It was a contested, bitterly contested election. 40 million people voted, and the president of Iran was re-elected. Some people had invested such hope that he would be defeated that they were inevitably disappointed. I don't know what happened in the counting houses all over Iran, and neither, with respect, does the caller, and neither does the BBC or CNN. But ABC television in the United States ran a poll 2 weeks before election day which actually predicted to the very percentage point what the actual declared election result was. So I personally believe that Ahmadinejad fairly won re-election. What the majority ought to have been, whether there was any fiddling in this place or that, I don't know. But I believe that the will of the Iranian people was carried through in those elections. There were then demonstrations. Some people were killed in these demonstrations. Not hundreds of thousands, not thousands, not even hundreds. But there were dozens of people killed in those demonstrations, and I very deeply regret that. I don't know who was responsible for it. If the Iranian state was responsible for shooting dozens of demonstrators, then I condemn it, as I would condemn it in any country in the world. Yes, please, come back in.
Yes, Mr. Galloway, I feel that I'm not surprised by your comment about you thinking that Mr. Ahmadinejad's election was fair, because he is also another dictator like Saddam Hussein. And I know that you were a favorite of Mr. Saddam Hussein and you were very close with him. Therefore, I'm not at all surprised that you feel that way. And also regarding Mr. Blair and the £1 million which he got from the Israelis that you claim, how much, can I ask you, Mr. Galloway, did you get paid from Mr. Saddam Hussein?
Well, let me stop you. Let me stop you there before you get your. No, let me stop you there before you get yourself into trouble. Saddam Hussein never gave me a single cent, not a thin dime. But people who claimed that he did have had to give me millions of pounds in damages for the very defamatory comments that you've just made live on television. So don't get yourself into trouble. Don't have to have me hunting for you. Now, your credibility can be measured by the fact that you came on this television station and claimed that the Iranian regime has killed hundreds of thousands of Iranian citizens. I think on reflection, you may regret saying that, because it's patent and absolute nonsense. I'll be back right after the news with the second half of the show. It's fighting talk, I must tell you. Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, where we have, as you've just experienced before the news, some great debates. It's better if we don't defame each other, however. Let's take a telephone call, because they're coming in thick and fast. Yes, caller, hello, where are you calling from?
Oh, hello there, George, how are you? This is calling from London, actually.
Welcome, sir.
Yeah, I appreciate all your comments you've made about the Taliban. I quite agree with what you're saying, and you're doing a good service in doing that.
Thank
but
you.
May I also say that, going along with your comments of America and British troops in Afghanistan, they definitely will not be able to conquer them because they are the people who live there, and they're fighting a popular war.
Yes.
Whatever they are like, they could be cruel to women, they could be backward, but they're putting up a pan-Islamic force, which is fighting off the aggressors. First, I would think that they would not be able to conquer that land. I think that the Pashtun Valley of Taliban will overpower them. Secondly, on your comment from Saudi Arabia, you said the talk will go to Saudi Arabia.
Yes, please, give me your view.
Yeah, view is that why are the Saudis so blind in what's going on? You know, how long will they keep on being so blind? You know, they should open their eyes, and the leaders there are too much pro-West, pro-America, pro-dance to American tunes, and they are breaking the back of the Islamic resistance. It should be somewhat like the government in Iran, which is the most progressive, most forward-looking government that I can ever think of. It is the only one country in the world, Islamic country, which has a truly progressive leadership, which looks forward, which has progressive form of Islam, which I agree with. Why can't the Saudis be like that too? And why should it be called Saudi Arabia? It is the Arab country, Arab Peninsula. Saudi is only a family. They are usurping the rights of the
yes.
Arabs, I think.
Yes, and although we do ourselves live in a country whose national anthem is to a person. So we're not blameless on that front ourselves. It's a very good set of points that you have made. I can't deal with them all. But let me just draw a comparison. In Saudi Arabia, there are no elections of any kind. There is no democracy and no freedom, not to demonstrate, not to write, not to vote, not to do anything at all that the regime disapproves of. And Amnesty International have just lashed them in the most excoriating way for their human rights record. Yet Saudi Arabia is never attacked by the Western media, which instead represents a relationship between the West and Saudi Arabia, which is characterized by massive sales of weapons, much of the money for which is recycled back into the pockets of the 50,000 so-called princes of the Saudi royal house. Thanks for your call. Let's take an email on the comment wall. Gary from London. At last, someone with the guts to criticize the Saudi kingdom, but why are they not condemned by Mr. Brown? He's very silent about that country. Give me an answer that can't be found on a conspiracy web forum. Well, I've been criticizing the Saudi dictatorship all of my life, and I have done so without fear or favor. I've also defended them when they've been unfairly attacked and attacked for the wrong things. But the facts are that the Saudi dictatorship is one of the grimmest prison states in the world. And yet, Mr. Brown or his defense secretary, I was on Question Time last Thursday, you can get it on the website, georgegalloway.com, and with Jeff Hoon, the former British defense minister, who spent almost his entire time that he wasn't invading other people's countries trying to sell weapons to the Saudi dictatorship. Now, what other dictatorship in the world would it be acceptable to sell weapons to? And why is it acceptable to sell weapons to the Saudi dictatorship? And why do we have a point of view towards the government of Iran, which was at least elected by tens of millions of people, and there have been 10 presidential elections in Iran in the 30 years of the Iranian Revolution? Why is Iran treated as some kind of pariah, while Saudi Arabia, where no freedom or liberty of any kind exists, is regarded as just a bumper customer? That's a question that we want to discuss. If you've got a different point of view, tell me. 208-601-455. Let's take a telephone call. Yes, caller, where are you calling from?
Hello.
Yes, sir.
My name is Mohammed Hosni Taha. I was born in Egypt, and I'm calling from England.
Welcome. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I've got 3 points now. The one is about Iran and Saudi Arabia. if all Muslims follow the Quran, this is the law of the whole Muslims, whether Shiite or Sunnis, and they should not kill each other because the Quran forbid it. That's one point. Secondly, Saudi Arabia will not recognize the Zionist state in Palestine because they occupying Palestinian land. That's the second point. The third point is the Zionist wants to, in Palestine, wants to neutralize relation with the Middle Eastern countries. But if they do that, as they do in America and in the West, the Arab countries will end up losing their properties and still owing the Zionist money. And that's why it's crippling people in America and in the West.
Well, look, thanks for that call. I'm sorry to rush you because we've got a lot of people trying to get through. So not everyone will be able to make 3 points. But it's obvious that the Saudis at this moment are putting considerable effort in to trying to divide the Muslim world on a Sunni-Shia confessional basis. And that's wrong. Muslims need to unite all over the world. There's enough division in the Arab world into 23 artificial states without a further division between Sunni and Shia being encouraged. So insofar as Saudi Arabia is involved in that, I don't know exactly the arrangements, but it's evident from the static and from the American media, which I read avidly, that Saudi Arabia is playing a role in that at the current time and trying to build up a sense of isolation of Iran, a fear of Iran. And I believe there's nothing to fear and it should not be isolated. So that puts me on a collision course with the foreign policy of Saudi Arabia and with its domestic policy. Well, I've already made my position clear. Thanks for your call. Let's take an email. This one from Dubai. Zayed, what is with all this Saudi bashing? Look at your own country's human rights abuses and treatment of women as being nothing but front page models. We treat women badly but cover them up. You treat them badly but show them stark naked. Good luck with your dirty House of Commons people. Well, I think there's a point there. I think that there's a point. The idea that women are somehow treated in a model way, in the correct and proper way in the West, is completely wrong. And the idea that women, even in Saudi Arabia, are treated universally badly is also wrong. In Saudi Arabia, for example, the majority of students in the university are women. So I'm not here condemning Saudi Arabia for its attitude towards women. I was attacking Sudan earlier for lashing women for wearing trousers, and I asked the question, what kind of Islam is that? My condemnation of Saudi Arabia is much more far-reaching than their attitude towards women. But why don't, Zayed, you get on the telephone and we can argue this out, 208-601-455. We do want to hear from a pro-Saudi point of view. If you hold one, your call is welcome. Here's a caller. Let's see what they have to say. Yes, caller, welcome.
If you hold one,
go ahead.
Is welcome. Here's a caller. Let's see what they have.
You'll have to turn your television down, or I'll have to cut you off. Well, I'm sorry. That's. Can I just make this clear? I know I sound irritable, but I do it every week. If you get through on the phone and you've got your television on, we can't have a conversation. Let's take an email on the comment wall. And this one is from where? Egypt. Sarah, we all saw Press TV in my country. Well done. But regarding Saudi, why can't people just leave it alone? They did help or try to help in the Gaza situation. And they have a good economy for their citizens. And they've never invaded anyone, at least in the last 100 years. So who is better, the U.S. or Saudi Arabia? Well, it's true, actually, that they have attempted to help the talks between the different and competing and even fighting Palestinian factions, but they haven't tried hard enough. It's true that they did attempt to send some aid to Gaza, but not nearly enough, and most of it conditional on the agreement of the Palestinian National Authority in Ramallah. It's true that they have not invaded anybody, but they did pay for the invasion of Afghanistan from Pakistan by the very people that the British and Americans are now fighting today, the so-called Mujahideen. And they did pay for the invasion from Honduras of the Contras, the vicious murderers who slit people's throats and left their tongues hanging like neckties in the destruction of the Sandinista government in Nicaragua. This was paid for by Saudi Arabia. They did pay for the fascist beasts of El Salvador, who murdered the Archbishop, murdered nuns, murdered human rights workers, murdered anybody that they could in the bitter and despicable war in that country. So I could go on. It's true Saudi Arabia hasn't invaded anyone, but it does have designs on some of its neighbors. Ask Qatar. Let's take a telephone call. Yes, caller, where are you calling from? Yes, hello.
Hello, Juji.
Yes, go ahead.
Hello, hi, Juji. Yeah, just wanted to let you know that I agree with all that you say about Saudi Arabia. Hello, yeah?
Yes, go ahead.
With regards to this corrupt kingship. Yeah, I just wanted to know, regarding the general public, what if they were to call for a republic? What are the chances of them having that?
Well, of course, in the end, that's a matter for the people of that country. The form of government in Saudi Arabia is a matter for them rather than a matter for me, and it's not a matter for you either. I just think that they have the right to choose the form of government that they want to have. And if the Saudi regime does not change, ultimately the Saudi regime will be changed, because the days of such dictatorships are definitely numbered. I stress, these are my points of view. They're not Press TV's points of view, still less are they the views of the government of Iran. Thanks for your call. Let's take another email. This one is from where? Ethiopia. Yusuf, I've seen Saudi guards release monkeys onto the holy cave of Hira. This is where the Prophet received his guidance from God, sacred for all Muslims. The Saudi guards did it to mock the Shia pilgrims who like to go there and pray. That's a good way to deal with religions, isn't it? Well, I don't know if that's true, Yusuf. It would be very serious if it was true, and I certainly don't want to associate myself or Press TV or this program with that particular allegation. But it's definitely true that Saudi Arabia has allowed itself to be used by the George Bush government, and there's no reason to believe that that has entirely stopped under Barack Obama, to try and drive a wedge in between the Sunni and Shia Muslims. And that's evident in some of the briefings that come out of the region about Hezbollah, about Syria, about Hamas, and about the intentions of Iran. And we saw Hillary Clinton in the last few days say that they're ready to arm their allies, all of them dictatorships of one kind or another, in the Gulf, as a counterweight to Iran, or as a threat to Iran. Let's take another telephone call. Yes, caller, where are you calling from?
Yeah, hi there. My name is Kumar, and I'm calling from London.
Welcome.
Hi, I just want to say that, George, you're doing a great job, you should keep it up. And I want to say to all the people that, you know, you shouldn't criticize somebody for what they say. I think we should be looking at what the person stands for. And I think that, you know, I don't really care about who George is. I don't care who you know, about who person X is or Y is, as long as they are standing up for something that is of justice. And I think, you know, instead of targeting individuals, like a few callers have done, I think they should be more fair. And look, I mean, if you really do support Iranian people, and, you know, you really care about them, then why don't you look at history, what happened 20, 30 years ago, decades ago? You know, how was the regime toppled? You know, I think it's just baseless looking at individuals. And talking about Israel, I think, you know, whatever happens, whatever investigation goes on, It's just going to be a repeat thing again and again and again.
Well, thanks, my friend, for your support on that. I appreciate it. I'm quite a heavily scrutinized person. I speak and write millions of words in print and in speeches all over the country on my twice-weekly radio shows, twice-weekly television shows. So my record of what I say is there in the public record. And when I have to take people to court for lying about me in a defamatory way, as was done earlier on this show, I've always won. I have never lost such a case. That's because I'm telling the truth. You may not agree with me, and I may not even be right, but I'm telling the truth as I genuinely see it. And to be honest, that's what Press TV has done to the British media market, indeed, on the international level. We aim to tell the truth. And we aim to be a voice for the voiceless. And more people are switching on to Press TV precisely for those reasons. Let's take an email on the comment wall. This one is from London. Ian, you're wrong to condemn the Western media about its lack of condemnation of Saudi Arabia. Just open a newspaper if you dare. It's full of condemnation. Remember Robert Kilroy Silk? Why are you so black and white about everything? Well, I can only barely remember Robert Kilroy Silk. As far as I know, he hasn't been writing in the media for about 10 years. I certainly don't see anyone questioning the strategic relationship between Britain and Saudi Arabia. And, Ian, neither do you. There is no one saying we should stop selling weapons to Saudi Arabia. There is no one saying we should be supporting the opposition to the dictatorship in Saudi Arabia. There is no one saying we should be freezing the assets of the royal dictatorship in Saudi Arabia, or we should be putting sanctions on them, or we should be amassing an army on its borders to threaten them because of their human rights record and because of their lack of legitimacy. You know, Ian, that that's true. Don't dredge up Robert Kilroy Silk. My goodness, how low can you go? Let's take a telephone call. Yes, caller, where are you calling from?
Hello, George. My name is Shaquille. I'm calling from West Yorkshire in England.
Welcome.
I remember I was watching you when you were in America facing a bunch of American politicians.
Yes.
And I salute you for that.
Thank you. That was a good day for me, yes.
Yeah, great respect for facing mm-hmm. those bunch of American politicians.
Thanks.
Today's question is, this, as you mentioned before about arms sales to Saudi Arabia, why is it not stopping? Why Western countries are selling arms to Saudi Arabia? I think you're right. As we know, all the Western countries mostly are facing economic crisis. And if they stop selling all these arms and warplanes and all these things, I think the economic crisis will prolong for a very long time.
Well, it's true, my friend, and thanks for your kind words. It's true that some people make a lot of money selling weapons to Saudi Arabia. But given Amnesty International's unbelievably critical report of human rights in Saudi Arabia, why isn't there a national debate about our relationship to a country guilty, according to Amnesty, of these terrible crimes? And the reason is more far-reaching just than profits from arms sales, though they're no doubt welcome to those who own the arms companies. It's because Saudi Arabia plays a role in the Middle East which is a pro-Western, pro-imperialist role. It can always be counted on to fund a dirty war somewhere against a regime that imperialism wants to get rid of, like Nicaragua, like El Salvador in the 1980s, or like Afghanistan when they paid for the so-called Holy War, which destroyed the only government in Afghan history that's ever actually sought to educate girls, educate women, try to liberate the countryside from the feudal owners, and so on. It's always reliable in that regard. It's now being used as a cat's paw against Iran. It's now being used to divide Muslims on a Sunni Shia dichotomy, and it's always ready to play that role. And the reason is because if not for Western support, this dictatorship would fall down. And if not for the trillions of Saudi dollars that are in the Western banks and economies in one way or another, the Western economies would be severely damaged. So, if I can put it in a rather vulgar way, they're in bed together. And it's not a pretty sight. Let's take a telephone call. Yes, caller, where are you calling from?
Dublin, Ireland.
Go ahead, sir.
Francis from Dublin, Ireland.
Go ahead, sir.
Just a general comment. Well, it's more an inquiry, and being that you've done research and as you might know, Saudi Arabia, it recognizes Israel. Would that be correct?
No, Saudi Arabia doesn't recognize Israel, no.
Right. Now, the follow-up question to that is, if that's the case, why would Saudi Arabia recognize Jordan, for argument's sake, because all that area was the original region of Palestine. So Palestine and Israel, or sorry, Israel and Jordan, as you know, would have been created with the Balfour Declarations, etc. So the Jordan region, for argument's sake, that was set up.
I don't think there's a comparison there. I'm certainly no friend of the government of Jordan, but Jordan is an Arab country. It's a member of the Arab League, and it's obvious that the Hashemites, who once ruled in Saudi Arabia, by the way, are going to be recognized by the House of Saud. There's no contradiction in that, but Saudi Arabia is guilty of many things, but it's not guilty of having relations with Israel. It may have relations under the table or behind the scenes, like many of them do, but it has not recognized Israel. It does not have an embassy there, and it does not officially have any dealings with Israel. So let's be fair about that. Let's take an email on the comment wall. And this one is from Bristol. Danny, Saudi Arabia has been a friend of Britain for the past 80 years, ever since we created it from a desert of emptiness. But how much oil do we actually get from there? Does anyone know? Well, we didn't create it. As a matter of fact, the British were supporting the Hashemites, who now rule only in Jordan, but once ruled in Iraq, and once ruled in the Hejaz in Saudi Arabia. We were supporting the other side, not the Saudis. The Saudi Arabia came to pass because of the armed conquest of the country by the House of Saud and their Wahhabi allies. So your historical facts are wrong. And as for us creating it, Saudi Arabia is quite a holy and significant piece of earth. You shouldn't rubbish it in that way by describing it as emptiness. Let's take an email on the comment wall. This one is from Brasilia. Brazil, amazing. The Saudi government may have a few problems, but have they dealt with their country and people so badly? Well, it is important. That's a good point. It's important to keep it in perspective. It's not the worst government in the world. But the economic situation of its people is now far less than it was even a decade or two decades ago. And the 50,000 princes who are sucking the blood of the country may have something to do with that. If you've ever seen those princes move around the world in their jumbo jets and their Rolls Royces and seen them, not that I have because I've never been in one, in the casinos in Mayfair in London, you'd understand where the Saudi money is going. These are my views. They're not the views of Press TV, and they're certainly not the views of the government of Iran. I hope you've enjoyed the great debate, the big conversation this evening, and if you have, join me next week at the same time, in the same place, here on Press TV. You can also catch my show on Sundays called The Real Deal, and my radio shows on Friday and Saturday nights on TalkSport. It's been marvellous for me. I hope it was for you. And until we meet again, God willing, may you go in peace. I've been George Galloway. This has been Comment on Press TV. And you've been a marvellous audience.